Nice to see everybody. Shavua Tov. Well, when I was that Tuesday, but nice to see everybody again, and excited at the opportunity to continue to learn together. What I wanted to talk today about is a topic that is an important topic, not just in general, but also as we see, part of the conversation will be very timely, and that is to talk about the topic of kingship. In Judaism, and we'll get into some discussion about, in general, rules of law and how Judaism views how a society should be ruled. Meaning nowadays, as we know, the classic or all enlightened and Western countries rule through democracy. That wasn't always the case. And the question is, what does Judaism believe? I mean, does Judaism believe in a monarchy? Does Judaism believe in democracy? Is it clear that there's one or the other? Might it depend on what society is doing at the time? And I think that's a very, very interesting question. We're not going to discuss some of the more modern-day questions, meaning, like, for example, now the State of Israel is, what we would call a religious democracy. And there's a lot of big questions as to how to balance the religion, or probably more accurately, a Jewish democracy. And there's major questions about how to balance the Judaism and the democracy. How do you balance those two? What I wanted to talk about today was really just to take a step back and understand the concept of kingship. We look at this week's Parsha, we see for the first time the Torah introducing a specific type of rulership, and that is kingship, monarchy. And I wanted to kind of do a little bit of a deep dive into understanding how Judaism views monarchy in general. And through that, we'll touch upon some of the ideas, maybe even some relevant things that are happening in Israeli society today. Obviously, we won't get controversial at all, but just to see how timely and how relevant all of these topics really are, not just back in the times of the Torah, but how relevant they are today as well. We'll start with when we think about the way that the Jewish people generally used to be ruled, when we had our own sense of rulership, it was always a monarchy. Okay, thinking back to the times of the Jewish people, from Moshe, obviously Moshe and Yeshua were not, and we have times of the Shoftim, but from the times when there was a clear leadership, it started with Shaul, David, Shlomo, right? There always was a Jewish monarchy, and that was how things were for many, many, many years. There were times where there was debate or there was conflict as to who was going to be the proper Jewish monarch, If we take it a step further, when we think about the Jewish future, when we think about the times of Mashiach, how do we usually think about how Mashiach? What is Mashiach? At least in our modern idea, he's a king, Melech HaMashiach. We refer to him as Melech HaMashiach. Meaning, the concept of a monarchy is deeply ingrained in both Jewish history, and I think if we think about it, at least the way that I've always viewed it, and very much a big part of the Jewish future and how Judaism and how B'nai Israel will be governed, at least when we think about it. Mashiach, Melech HaMashiach, and things like that. And the question is, was that always an ideal? Is it an ideal? And that starts from this week's Parsha. If you look at source number one, we have, for the first time, what seems to be a clear commandment to appoint a king. Source number one, for space purposes, I wasn't able to add in the translation, English translation, so I apologize. I will translate the psukim as we go through them. Ki tavo el haaretz, when you enter the land, asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha virishta, Pasuk Yudalad in source number one, when you enter the land that God has given you to inherit, v'yashavta ba, and you settle the land, v'amarta, and you say, asima alai melech, I would like to place upon myself a king, kechol hagoyim asher sivivosai, just like all the nations around me. Okay? So the Torah is introducing this idea that after you inherit the land and you make the following claim, I would like to have a king, som tasim alecha melech, says the Torah, you should place upon yourself a king, asher yivchar Hashem elokecha bo, mikerev achecha. That if you're going to place upon yourself a king, that king should be from who? From the Jewish nation. You are not allowed to appoint a king from someone who is not from the Jewish nation. Okay? So very clearly the Torah has set up for us is, and we'll stop here for now, hopefully we'll get back to the rest of the psukim, but the Torah has introduced is this concept of having a king. And how does the Torah phrase it? Let's actually put it out to you. I'll do a quick review, but let's think about the way that the Torah phrases this commandment. The Torah says, when you enter the land, you settle the land, and you decide I'd like to have a king, you should appoint for yourself a king, just make sure that you appoint someone from Am Yisrael and not from anybody else, not from the other nations. What's strange about this commandment? Anything strange about the way that this has been commanded? Excellent. So first of all, what seems to be is the Torah doesn't say when you enter the land and settle it, appoint a king. What does it say? It says when you enter the land and you settle it and you decide that you'd like a king, then there's a commandment to appoint a king. So if, as we say again in Gemara language, mimanafshach, if it's a commandment, if there's a mitzvah, if there is a commandment to appoint a king, so it shouldn't be based on what Am Yisrael want. It should be, when you enter the land, appoint for yourself a king. And if it's not a mitzvah, so then what's this command? Is it a commandment? What exactly, the way that the Torah is phrasing it seems to be a little bit unusual in the way that usually the Torah will phrase commandments. Yes?
I have the idea, I don't know if I'm right about that, it was B'nai Yisrael that wanted the king and they just said, like, okay.
Okay, so good. No, what you are touching upon is something that's, again, that's part of what we're trying to figure out. There's going to be a big range in the opinion of the Rishon, of the Mefarshim, how to explain this. So that's what happened, but right, not right now. We're going to see. We are going to see. What you're referring to is in Sefer Shmuel, when the Jewish people turn to Shmuel and they say, we'd like a king. And it'll be interesting to see his reaction. So then what is this a commandment? Is the Torah just foreshadowing that Am Yisrael is going to want a king? Meaning, if it all came from Am Yisrael, then what are these psukim doing? Meaning, if it's all about what Am Yisrael wants, first of all, since when does God always give us what we want? Okay, number one. Maybe he does in certain cases, we'll see. Number two, well then how do you interpret these psukim? Is it saying you should know in the future you're going to want to have a king and therefore you should do it? Is it saying you shouldn't do it? Is it saying you can do it? That's part of what's unusual about the way that the Torah phrases the psukim. Yes?
Torah seems to be making allowance for what the expectation of that generation that
okay.
is.
Good.
Government is kingship, but if you have kingship, there are limitations.
Okay, so what Sonia is pointing at is she's suggesting, similar to what you were saying before, that maybe what the Torah is doing is this is an example of where Hashem is allowing certain cultural norms of the society that were in that were taking place to also happen. And we'll see that there are other examples of this. Meaning, sometimes the Torah does give in to the people if it's in certain instances. Okay, and that what's happening here is then but there's certain ways to do it. I saw a question back there, and then I'll get to you. Yes.
What was the time is? When the Jews asked for a king in the time of Shaul, before Shaul.
Good, we're going to get to that, exactly. Meaning, Hashem, yeah?
He says, the people are not disgusted with
you, Shmuel, they're disgusted with me. Excellent. Good. We're going to get to that. I'm going to hold off on what you're saying, meaning he's referencing this, that in light of this of these psukim, we're going to see it's very interesting to see the way that God reacts when the Jewish people do ask for a king.
These psukim are coming before.
This is in the Torah. This is in Sefer Shoftim. The request for a king is only going to happen in Sefer Shmuel, generations later.
And who is saying this?
Moshe. This is Moshe Rabbeinu on behalf of Hashem, meaning, again, Sefer Devarim is written by Moshe. Okay, it's always a little bit hard to know when he's talking on his own and when he's talking on behalf of Hashem. But basically, Hashem is basically saying, Moshe is saying, when Hashem brings you into the land, you should place upon, and you say, I would like a king, you should have a king. So first of all, we asked, since when do we need to first initiate to ask for something before we get it? And since when do we always get what we want? Why is there this strange phraseology? Yes. Could be. Good. Okay, so we're going to see that there are some interpretations that are saying that, we'll explain what that means in more detail. There might be more of not Hashem saying this is how it's supposed to be done, but this is how it will be done in the future. And that sometimes the Torah does do that. Yes, final comment before we go on.
At the time Moshe was speaking, Am Yisrael only had an experience of being led by a Navi, Moshe Rabbeinu.
Okay.
He wasn't the king.
Correct.
And he appointed a successor, Yeshua, who also wasn't named as king.
Correct.
So they could easily have come to the conclusion that they have to be led by a Navi. So Hashem is telling them, you may also be led by a king.
Meaning giving them the option.
Yeah.
Okay, so what Simon is suggesting is, maybe what's being done here is what we would call a reshut. This isn't a mitzvah. This isn't a commandment. Hashem is basically saying, until now you've been led by a Navi, and if you want, there's another model king. Now, by the way, that calls into question, very, very big question of, well, what's the difference between being led by a Navi and a king? Are they different powers? By the way, even when there is a king, who remains? Nevi'im. Okay, so then how do you, so we're not going to cover all of that, but you're right, that could be an interesting idea. But there's one other big question here, ladies and gentlemen. What else is strange? What's the reason we're given that God seems to almost justify for why we want a king?
Like the other nations.
Yep. Since when is that something that God would almost encourage? Now, it could be he's not. But the simple understanding is God is basically saying, if you enter the land, you settle the land, you come to me and you say, I want a king to be like the other nations, have a king. Since when does HaKadosh Baruch Hu encourage us to be like the other nations? Why is this all of a sudden something that the Torah is like almost, not glorifying, but kind of suggesting as part of the process? Okay? So those are the things we have to think about here. We have to think about what exactly, is this a mitzvah? Is it not a mitzvah? If it is a mitzvah, why is it phrased in such a strange way? Number two, what's this idea of being like the other nations? Since when is that considered a positive? I would add that if you look at source number two, this is exacerbated by a Gemara. The Gemara seems to say very clearly that this is a mitzvah, this is a commandment. Source number two, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. V'chein haya Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda said the following. Shalosh mitzvot nitztavu Yisrael b'knisatan la'aretz. There were three mitzvot that Am Yisrael were commanded to do when they entered the land. One, lahamid lahem melech. Two, appoint for themselves a king. Lachrid zar'o shel Amalek, to destroy the progeny of Amalek. V'livnot lahem beit ha-bechira, and to build the beit ha-mikdash. Now there's a whole debate, what order was it supposed to be done in? That's a big question. It does seem to be in the order that it's mentioned, which is how it also happened, by the way. You have, eventually Shaul was king, and then they were commanded to destroy Amalek. That was Shaul's job in killing, and he failed in his job in killing Agag and destroying Amalek. And then ultimately, Shlomo is the one who builds the beit ha-mikdash. But what seems to be from this pasuk very clearly is that there is a clear mitzvah to appoint a king. So this gets back to our original question. If there is a mitzvah, then why does the Torah phrase it in such a strange way? Compounding all of that, let's now read through the story of when Am Yisrael actually do ask for a king and see how God reacts, because that seems to compound the problem. Source number three in Sefer Shmuel. We're going to do a little bit longer part of the story, because I think it's important to understand the context, and you'll see why in a little bit. So just bear with me as we go through this entire story. Vayehi kasher zaken Shmuel vayasem et banav shoftim b'Yisrael. So Shmuel, who was a trusty Navi, he was getting older, and he decided, as many good parents do, he decided to appoint his children to continue in his mission. So his sons now become the shoftim, not Navi necessarily, but the shofet of Am Yisrael, which means like a ruler, what they've had until now. They haven't had a king, they've had a shofet. Vayehi shem b'no ha-bechor Yoel, the name of his bechor was Yoel, v'shem mishneu Avia, shoftim b'Be'er Sheva. Okay, so you have Yoel and Avia, and they were the shoftim in Be'er Sheva. V'lo halchu banav bidrachav. His sons didn't follow in Shmuel's ways. Vayitu acharei habatza, and they would follow after bribery. They were, according to the simple understanding of the story, they were taking bribes. Vayikhu shochad, again they took bribes. Vayatu mishpat, and they would perverse judgment. So according to the simple understanding of the story, Shmuel appoints his sons to take over for him as he gets older. And he's still alive, but he's, you know, less involved. His sons are not keeping in what's happening. And how do the nation react? Vayitkabzu kol ziknei Yisrael vayavo el Shmuel haramata. All of a sudden, the zikenim, the elders of the community, they approach Shmuel and they say the following. Vayomer elav, hinei ata zakanta. You're older. You're reaching retirement age. Uvanecha lo halchu b'drachecha. And your sons are not following in your ways. Sima lanu melech lishaftenu kichol hagoyim. Place for us a king who will judge us like all the other nations. This is exactly what the Torah predicted, commanded, was going to happen. Now look how Shmuel reacts. Vayera davar b'nei Shmuel. This was bad in the eyes of Shmuel. Kasher amrut na lanu melech. He didn't like when they turned him and said, "Give us a king lishaftenu, to judge us." to judge us. Vayispalel Shmuel al Hashem, and Shmuel turns to Edom and says, Hashem, he doesn't like this. What is Vayomer Hashem al Shmuel Shema b'kol ha'am? You should listen to them. L'kol asher yomru elecha, everything that they're asking for. Ki lo otcha ma'asu, they're not pushing you away. They're not disgusted with you. Ki oti ma'asu, they're disgusted with me, says God. Mimloch aleihem, they're disgusted with my kingship over them, and that's why they're asking for a king. Okay, so there's a hint here that God is almost saying, what's the ideal? The ideal is I'm the king. The fact that they're asking for a king is not an indictment of you, Shmuel. It's an indictment of me. They don't want me as their king. Everything that I've done, everything that they keep, all their actions that they do from the time I took them out of Mitzrayim until now, they've left me, they've served other gods. They're doing the same thing to you. So does God seem to be happy with their request for a king? No, right? He seems very clearly not. And not only that, and we won't see all of this right now, but basically what happens is, basically God tells Shmuel to say to them, if you want a king, this is what a king is going to do. He's going to take your sons to work for them. He's going to take your daughters. I mean, don't think that having a king is all fun and games. If you have a king, there's all these things he's going to do. He's going to take your money. He's going to tax you. It goes without getting into all the different details. Basically, having a king is going to require you to give him a lot. And you're going to have to give up a lot. And then we'll skip to Pasuk Yud Zayin, because it's important to see it. Tzonchem ya'asor v'atem tiyulo l'avadim. You're going to be like avadim. The second you have a king, you become servants. Not servants in the classic sense, but servants of the king. Are you sure you want to subject yourself to that? Uzgatem b'yom ahu b'lifnei malkechem. You're going to cry in front of the king. Asher b'chartem lachem v'no lo ya'aneh Hashem eschem b'yom ahu. Hashem won't answer you. Meaning, almost like be careful what you wish for. If you're going to get the king, but realize that a king comes with a lot. The nation still does not. It says here they refuse to listen, but they basically say we want it anyway. We want a king to be upon us. We want to be like the other nations. Ushvatanu malkeinu. We want a king to judge us. And he should go in front of us and fight our wars. Vayishma Shmuel kol divrei ha'am vayidabrem bazne Hashem. Shmuel listens and passes it along. Vayomer Hashem el Shmuel shema bikolam. If this is what they want, they still want it. Listen to them. V'himlachta lehem melech vayomer Shmuel al anshei Yisrael lechu ish le'er. He says, "Go find a king," and then the process begins. I see a couple of questions. Yes, comments.
I'm suddenly struck for the first time listening to this that the issue of the corruption that's plainly stated in the text is not addressed. Almost cynically, as
I'm
saying, that's going to be a constant.
Okay, good. I think that. Listen, we all know that absolute power absolutes corrupts absolutely. There's no question. It's not addressed here, although we didn't focus on it. But it is something that is going to come into play when we see some of this. Though I do believe that you'll see what I mean soon. There's a reason why I brought that. Very often we don't look at that part of the story, and it is important to note also that there are different interpretations. There are some interpretations that say that this wasn't as bad as it looks. That they weren't so bad. But I think it is going to be an important point. Yes?
According to the Tanakh, they said that they were accused of taking bribe. That wasn't exactly so. They just didn't follow the...
Good. Okay, that's exactly what you're referring to. Yeah, what you're referring to is that the simple understanding is they took bribes, if you look at the text, but not everyone understands it that way. There are different interpretations as to how bad it was. And I think that's going to be an important point. Correct. But it is important to note, it's always good to see the text. The text is pretty, I mean, it repeats itself. It can't be more explicit than saying that they took bribes. Although it is true that there isn't a rabbinic interpretation that says that it was different than that. But it's always good to see the text, because the text was written like that for a reason. Yes?
Here, Hashem is telling Shmuel that they're not really dissatisfied with you, they're dissatisfied with me. That seems to contradict what's later in this, I think it's later, where Shmuel addresses the people and says, I haven't done anything bad to you. I didn't take anything from you. And you didn't, you have no gripes against me. It's as though he was taking it personally.
Right. It's a good question. Look, it does seem like he's taking it personally, especially in the beginning, because, you know, think about it from this perspective. You're getting older, you've appointed a successor, and all of a sudden they say, we don't want it. It is a little bit of a, by the way, we're going to see soon, also, if they wanted to, the timing might not have been appropriate as well. That's according to some interpretations, the timing of how they did this was not.
What could be worse than
Although I think it's important to note that, you know, not every succession plan is ideal. Just because you were a great rabbi doesn't mean your son's going to be a great rabbi. Just because you were great to lead a community doesn't mean those succession plans where they involve bloodline, although in kingship that is, does exist. But, you know, it doesn't always work. And sometimes the parent is blinded to the reality. And this might be some of that. Where else we also see it with Eli, right? Eli, before Shmuel, the same thing happened. Eli's kids did not act in it. We also, you know, the question of why Moshe's kids didn't succeed him. Aaron's kids did succeed him. So, you know, it's a major question. And I think here it's just raising the question a little bit more. Yes, correct. Again, you know, you always have to be careful because you want to be as reverent as you can with them. But I think we always, and this is what I've always learned from my father and from my Rebbeim, is that on the one hand, these were Nevi'im, but they were also people. Just like when we talk about the Avos, meaning they were on a higher level, but that doesn't mean that they didn't make mistakes or they didn't have challenges. But so sometimes the fact that they made mistakes and then still got to the level that they did is what teaches us, is what encourages us to be the people that we are. But it is important to know that not everyone says that they did so. We'll get to that soon. Now, again, what this raises is another fundamental question, which is if the Torah was commanding them to take a king, and the Torah said, this is what's going to happen. You're going to come, you're going to get settled, you're going to ask for a king to be like the other nations, appoint for yourself a king, which is exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And what do Shmuel and God do? They react with frustration, with anger. So, what's going on here? This is exactly what the Torah said was going to happen, and yet here you have a seemingly strange reaction to a justified and important and seemingly, you know, quality request. That's the question that I'd like us to kind of understand. That's another question to add to the picture. Now, in order to understand this, the framework for this really begins in understanding is a Tosefta. A Tosefta, which is an additional medrash. Additions to the Mishnah that didn't make it into the main corpus of the Mishnah, which is it's listed in a separate sefer. The Tosefta also quotes opinions by different rabbis that are in the Mishnayot, and the Tosefta kind of raises this question: basically, what happened? Why was there such a distant? Why was what Bnei Yisrael requested from Shmuel so bad in light of the Torah? Look at source number 4. V'chein haya Omer, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. It's actually this Tosefta quotes the beginning of the Gemara that we saw before. Shalosh mitzvot nitztavu Yisrael b'viatan. There were three mitzvot that they were commanded. Nitztavu livnot lehem melech, to appoint a king. Livnot lehem beit habechira, to build a beit hamikdash. Ulachrid zaro shel amalek, and to destroy amalek. By the way, just interesting to note here, the order is changed in the Tosefta from the Gemara. I just noticed that now as I was reading it. I don't have an explanation why, but it's always good whenever you see two sources that are similar yet a little bit different. Always interesting to see why that might be. Then continues the Tosefta, Im Kain, Laman en Shubim Nei Shmuel. If this was a mitzvah, then why were they punished in Shmuel's time when they asked for a king? And the Gemara gives three answers. The Tosefta gives three answers. Answer number one, Ela lefi shehikdimu alehem. They were jumping the gun. Their request itself to have a king was appropriate, but it was too early. It wasn't the right time. Their timing was not correct. Now, this opinion doesn't explain why, and we're going to see the Ramban and others will explain why. But let's just put that in the back of our minds. Answer number one, the request itself to have a king was appropriate. The timing was incorrect. Number two, Rabbi Nehorai Omer, Lo ne'emra parsha zu, Ela mipnei hatir omot shel sheneemar viamarta asima alai melech. Nehorai says, really, the idea of having a king was just a concession to the people. Ideally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want them to have a king. It's only that God knows that they're going to need it, as the Torah itself says. And you say, I want to appoint a king. Why does the Torah introduce it by saying, and you're going to want to appoint a king? Because according to Sezer ben Orai, it's not necessarily the ideal. It's more God's concession to mankind. Mankind needs a king. He's going to allow it. So the Torah is allowing it. But that's why God gets disappointed when they actually need it in Shmuel, in Sefer Shmuel. Because even though it's allowed, there's a certain disappointment that the people need it. Okay, so opinion number one is it was totally valid and appropriate. It was just the wrong time, and that was their mistake. Opinion number two is really the ability to have a king was a concession. God was giving concession to the people. He didn't really, ideally, they shouldn't have a king. Answer number three. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Zekenim sha'alu kahalacha, she'ne'emar tenalanu melech l'shaftenu, aval ami ha'aretz chazru v'kilkilu. There were actually two different groups of people in Sefer Shmuel asking for a king. You had the elders. The elders came and said, appoint for us a king, and that was appropriate. The way, what they wanted to do was appropriate. But then you had the masses who came and added on, why do we want a king? To be like everybody else. And that was the mistake. It was the way that they asked for it. By saying we want a king, not just because we want a king in order to be able to function normally, but we want a king to be like the rest of the nations, that was inappropriate. Okay. So according to the third answer, it was okay to have a king. It was the way they asked for it, the rationale that they asked for it, that was inappropriate. Now, it's important to note that what comes out of this, ladies and gentlemen, is that there's two fundamental approaches to kingship in this Tosefta. According to answer number one and number three, kingship is appropriate, is a mitzvah, and is desired. It's how Hashem envisions us ruling over ourselves. It was just a problem with the way they asked for it. It was a problem with the timing. There were technicalities in Sefer Shmuel which caused God to be upset. But the actual idea of having a king is appropriate. According to the second answer, the fundamental assumption is this is not the ideal. Really, God would prefer that we didn't have a king. It's just that because we're going to need it, God allows us to have it. Those are two very, very different, fundamentally different ways of looking at kingship in Judaism. And we're going to see is after this Tosefta, the Mefarshim themselves diverge amongst these two groups. We're going to see a group of Mefarshim that have the basic premise, which is kingship is not ideal. Halavai, we didn't need a king. And we're going to see this soon. Why? Because who's our king? Hashem's our king. We shouldn't need another king. We have other ways that we can govern ourselves. We don't need a king. But Hashem gave it to us because we saw that it wasn't going to work otherwise. And then you see a group of people, which is the majority of opinions, that say, no, kingship is the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended it from the beginning. We just have to do it right. Okay, so I saw there was a question or a comment.
Just a comment that Hashem knew they were going to ask for a king.
Correct. The Torah does say you're going to do it. And that gets into some of the questions we're going to see soon, how the Mefarshim explain it. Again, one interpretation is going to be that Hashem was foreshadowing it. Or Hashem was saying this might be why you're going to do it, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing. The Torah also talks about how we're going to sin, talks about how we're going to. Now, again, that gets into the question is, was the Torah foreshadowing? Or was the Torah giving us a legitimate there's different ways to look at it. But it's a very, very good point. Correct. The Torah does mention it, and then we live it, and we do it, and then Hashem gets upset. So it seems a little bit unfair, but maybe that's just, you know, the way that it plays out.
Any indication as to the unity of the people at that time that they requested a king?
That's a good question. Again, if you look at the text says the Ziknei Yisrael came. The assumption is we don't see any, and even when Shaul is appointed, there's no.
He built a shul many years ago, and it was beautiful. Except everybody wanted the halacha to be according to his tradition. We hired a rabbi.
And did that work?
That settled it.
Was hiring the rabbi? Was it easy to hire the rabbi? That's the question. Yes. Or did everyone want their own rabbi?
It united the congregation, and that's what I'm asking. Could they have asked for a king, a leader? A king is just a title.
Good question. Good point.
Asked for a leader because they were leaderless.
Excellent. Well, good. We'll get to that. Part of the question is going to be, again, there's a whole range of Mefarshim here. As to that the request was okay. Again, that's what I'm saying. There's one fundamental approach, which is the request was bad. Not bad. The request was less than ideal because that's not what God really wanted. He was only, but eventually he gave it to us because he knew that's what we needed. Okay? The other approach is going to be fundamentally kingship is appropriate, but you have to ask for it the right way. And there was something wrong with the way that they asked for it, which we're going to see. There's Baruch Hashem, a wide range of opinions, and it's really beautiful to see the different interpretations that are here. What I want to start with is the approach, the less popular approach, and the less, less mainstream approach, which is the approach that says that it is not necessarily standard to have a king. It was actually a reshut, it was permission. In fact, the Ibn Ezra, on his commentary on the Torah, when the Torah says, Som tasim alecha melech, he says one word, reshut. What does reshut mean? Permission. When the Torah says, Som tasim, which seems to be saying, you should appoint, what Ibn Ezra was saying is it was giving us permission. God gave us permission. If we get to a point where we want it, we have permission to do it. There is no mitzvah, which means he understands that Gemara, the Gemara that lists this as one of the three mitzvot, he must understand that Gemara differently. that there was no command to have a king, it was permission to have a king. And the person who really takes this the farthest is the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel is of the opinion that fundamentally, again, I brought it for you, it's a little bit long, but I want to see a few parts of it, because he really, now the Abarbanel mentions this as part of a larger discussion of how of governance. How are we meant to govern ourselves? How are the Jewish people in an ideal sense meant to govern themselves? So look at source number 5. Okay, again, I took pieces from it, and we're just going to see pieces of what I took, but I wanted to bring it in case you wanted to have more of it for yourselves. Ha-hakdama ha-shinit, the second introduction to this discussion, he, she'af shenoda, she'yot ha-melech dvar mo'il ve'hech rechi ba'am, litaken ha-kibbutz ha-medini u'shmurato, even though we're going to see that ultimately a king was required and necessary in order to create a certain uniformity and unity, as you pointed out, within the nation, mashehu b'chaluf ha'emet, hinei ba'am Yisrael, einenu kein. Even though that's what a regular nation needs, really Am Yisrael should not need it. Why? Ki einu tzarich v'lo echrichilim. They don't need that. Why not? Ubir, and he says the Barbanel, I'll explain to you why not. Ubir zehu, shetzorech hamilachim ba'am hinei yuchlelu b'gimel inyanim. We're at source number 5, the third line. He says, generally when a nation, any nation, needs a king, it's for three reasons. Number one, ha'alif, le'inyan hamilchamot, to lead them into war. Lohoshia et ha'am oyvehem u'lilachem ba'ad artam. Whether it's leading them into war or it's overseeing the war efforts, that's one role of the king. Ve'habet, lisader hanimusim ulhaniach hatorot hatzrichot letikunam. To set up standards, laws, values. You need someone who's going to create a uniform society, a standard. Ve'hagimel, the third, lehakot ulehanish pa'amim shelo kedin, to punish those people who don't. So what are the three needs of a king? He says, number one, to lead them into war. Number two, to set up a society of laws. Number three, to punish those who don't keep the law, to keep make sure everyone's keeping to what they need to. Continues the Abarbanel, the next line. Vinei hagin agimo aninim ha'ilo ha'uma Yisrael lo titzarech. We don't need a king for those three things, because we already have somebody who leads us in war. Who leads us in war? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we have somebody who set the laws. Who set the laws? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then he adds, again, we're not going to see it inside just for time, and then we also have somebody in place to punish those who don't. Not just Hashem, we have Beit Din. We have Shoftim, right? At the beginning of this week's parsha, Shoftim is Shotrim. So says the Abarbanel, we shouldn't need a king. Nations need a king to be unified, to lead them into war, to create a society of laws, and to enforce those laws. We have a HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's going to do most of that. And even though he can't do the last part because he's not in the physical world, he set up a group of people who will. So we shouldn't need a king. Let's skip to the next paragraph. So says the Abarbanel, therefore, when Hashem enables us to have a king, or when Hashem talks about a king in the beginning in Sefer Shoftim, it's more a concession. It's more a permission. It's more recognizing that if you really want to, you can. After these introductions, we're in the second paragraph of source number 5. Shema Perush Parshat HaMelech. Now I'm going to explain to you, well then, if that's the case, if we don't need a king, then what's this whole, what are these psukim in Parshat Shoftim? Kifi Amitata. Hinei ba'amru ki tavo el ha'aretz. If you're going to come into the land, Asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha v'rishta v'yashavta ba, v'amarta asima alai melech echol ha'goyim asher sevivotai, ein baze mitzvah klal. This isn't a commandment that you must appoint a king. Hilo tziva Hashem Yisbarach sheyom ruze. Meaning, and by the way, this is implied in the way that it's phrased. Okay? How does the pasuk describe it? You enter the land, and then you ask for a king. Then you should appoint a king. And by the way, it's similar to what Sonia said. Says the Abarbanel, what was the commandment? The commandment was that you should have a king. The commandment was, if you're going to ask for a king and need a king, there are certain rules through which you should appoint the king. He shouldn't come from outside the nation. We'll see later, we talked about he shouldn't have too many of this, he shouldn't have too many of that, he should carry around the Sefer Torah. Says the Abarbanel, the whole psukim weren't telling us you should appoint a king because it's good to have a king. The Torah was saying, if you get to a point where you as a nation need the king, then this is how you should do it.
No alternative. You have no government, you have no leader.
So says the Abarbanel, we have Batei Din. We have Batei Din who are going to enforce the law. And everything else, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I agree, by the way. Meaning, there's a reason why this is, I think, a minority opinion, is because there is a practical piece to all of this, which is, again, in the end of the day, it doesn't always work when you just have Beit Din enforcing certain laws and you don't have somebody at the top making a lot of the other... Meaning, again, whether it's a monarchy or it's a democracy or it's something else, you're right. Meaning, what you're saying is, again, it gets to the question of how much we rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu for things and how much we rely on ourselves. When we're going to war, who should be the leader? Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the leader. But at the end of the day, practically, what do we also usually need? A Ramatkal, a general, a chief of staff. But the Abarbanel is saying, we don't need a king. We don't need a king for that. Maybe there's ways to do it separately. But most other opinions are going to say, no, the king is needed for the unification, to make certain decisions, to bring everybody together. But the Abarbanel is of the opinion that that's not necessary. We have a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we have Beit Din to enforce the laws. Okay. Now, it's very interesting to see that, again, we talked about concession. We talked about how this is a concession. According to the Abarbanel, this is basically God saying, if you need it, I allow you to. And by the way, he compares this to other cases where God gave a certain concession. One is in next week's Parsha, Parshat Ki Tetzé, the famous story of Eshet Yifat Toar, where a person who goes out to war is given, I don't know if it's permission, right? Permission to be able to take a woman as captive and to do what he wants with her. Now there's a whole discussion as to why that's considered appropriate. So says the Abarbanel, it's not a mitzvah to do that. It's more that if you're in a situation where this is what you're going to need to do for various reasons, then this is how it should be done. If you're going to anyway take her and sleep with her, you should do it in a certain way, which hopefully, at least the way the Torah describes it, will ensure that you'll either take care of her or you won't end up doing it because you realize that the ramifications of doing that won't. So the Torah, it says the Abarbanel, this is another example where the Torah is basically saying, ideally you shouldn't do it. But if you're going to do it, we would like to try to, that the Torah wants to be able to tell you how to do it. By the way, he doesn't mention this, but there are other examples of this where we see a certain concession to man's needs. This is a little bit of a controversial point, but it's an important point. The Rambam mentions this with regard to korbanot. Okay, we talk about korbanot. Why? The whole idea of korbanot, according to the Rambam in Mor Devuchim, and again, it's a controversial idea. The Rambam takes him to task and says this is ridiculous. According to the Rambam in Mor Devuchim writes, the reason why God told the people to bring korbanot was because that was how they saw the other nations serving their gods. The whole world of korbanot only came as a concession because that was how the societies used to serve their gods. And therefore God said, if that's how they're going to, then you should at least direct it towards me and do it in this way. Now the Ramban doesn't like that. Says the Ramban, this whole world, all you just basically took all of Sefer Vayikra and basically said that it's all a concession to God, to man. He finds trouble with that. But at least there is support for this idea that sometimes in certain ways, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, well, if this model is what was done in the times, I will concede to allow you to do it, but I want to regulate how you're going to do it. And that, according to the Abarbanel, is what this was about. Yes?
It's also not particularly surprising that the Abarbanel is not fond of the idea of kingship. He's serving
giving his
Isabella and
Ferdinand. That very well could be.
And he sees the...
Good, very well, could be. It could be. There's always that question of how much a person's personal experience has impacted his outlook on these things. It's hard to know, but it could be.
When you're talking about the Kavanos, what is the wording? Is it similar? I mean, there must be a reason why you said, was it the Rambam or whoever that said it's also like a concession?
The Rambam.
He must have had a...
Where did he get that from?
Yeah.
It's a very good question. Correct. Korbanos are a fundamental part of our Judaism. And the Rambam seems to suggest that it was a concession to that. That was how. Because God took the Jewish nation out of Egypt. In Egypt, how did everyone serve their gods? By bringing sacrifices. And therefore Hashem said, okay, this is how you're going to serve me. And then eventually it became a part of what we have. I didn't bring anything here because I was just giving this as an example. The Rambam, what does Rambam bring as evidence? I don't remember if he has any evidence. I don't remember. It's in Mor Devuchim. I'd have to find the specific place. Again, it is controversial. I'll give you another example. It's a fascinating question. There's a big debate regarding the Mishkan. Was the Mishkan commanded before Chet HaEgel or after Chet HaEgel? Okay, it's a big discussion in the Mefarshim, right, in the order. And according to some Mefarshim, the Mishkan was only commanded after Chet HaEgel as a response to Chet HaEgel. Which means that according to those opinions that say that it was a response, had the Jewish people not sinned Cheda Egel, there would be no such thing as a Mishkan. Now that's wild. Because the Mishkan, the Beit HaMikdash, everything that we know revolves around that. And yet according to those Mefarshim, it only results as a response from Cheda. So again, it's a big debate. And there are some people who say, that's crazy. How could you say that the Mishkan and everything about it would not have been commanded if not for Cheda Egel? The Mishkan was so fundamental to our Avodat Hashem, the Beit HaMikdash, which eventually resulted. So these are big debates and they're important. But what we see here, it's hard to know where you apply it. But the idea that sometimes there's a concession or a result of actions or of needs is something that we've seen before. And at least according to the Barbell, that's what's happening here with kingship as well. Yes. Well, again, it's a great question. I believe the Ramban. It's tricky because if you look at I don't remember. But if you look at the Torah itself, the Cheda Egel comes after. God commands Truma Tetzaveh, and then you have the Cheda Egel, and then you have the building of the Mishkan. But not everyone reads it that way. There are some people that this is one of the unique circumstances where some people will say the phrase "Ein mukdam u'muchar b'Torah," that not everything is in order. That doesn't mean that nothing in the Torah is ever in order. It means in certain instances. I could be wrong. I believe the Ramban is under the impression that says that really kitisa or the end happened before the commandment, and that God only commanded it as a result because of something that happened. Cheda Egel, God said, "You know what? The people need a Mishkan." Also, a concession to man's needs.
Didn't Moshe get the whole Torah at Sinai?
Yes, but what was included, in terms of what was included, what was meant to be included, it's a good question also. It's a good question too, in terms of what was meant to be, meaning that's a question regarding in general, how much of it did he receive? Good question as well. Okay, let's keep going. I want to just add, so this is one direction. One direction that is taken is the Abar Benel, hinted at in the Ibn Ezra, and then you even have the Rabbeinu Bechaye in source number 6, is a very interesting line. He also seems to be troubled by the idea of a king and seems to think that a king is not something that should be commanded, that was ideal. And he has a very interesting line. Vilashon som tasim. The phrase som tasim alecha melech. You should appoint for yourself a king. Hayaya cholamar timne. Why does it say som tasim? The word to place. It could have said appoint. Otakim, which is also to appoint. Aval hu milashon sam. Sam. What does sam mean? Sam means chemicals, drugs. Okay. In today's world slang, samim means drug. Now, drugs doesn't mean necessarily in today's world. Samim means in a derogatory way, but sam can just mean some kind of medicine, a medicine of some sort. Okay, right, just like the word drugs can be positive, be necessary drugs. Okay, uva lirmoz, why does it use the word tasim? Lirmoz ki hamelech, it comes to hint to the fact that a king, hu sam chayim, o sam mavet. A king could either be very good, or it could be very bad. Okay, now by the way, there's a debate whether those words, o sam mavet, are supposed to be in that text of the Rabbeinu Bechaye or not. That's why it's in brackets. Ki hu kalul min hakol, vizeh lashon som tasim. So says the Rabbeinu, again, it's a play on words. Rabbeinu Bechaye is basically saying that in the words themselves, we're already hinting that a king could be very good, or a king can sometimes be very bad. It depends on the intent, it depends on the person, it depends on so many different factors, and therefore, Rabbeinu Bechaye says, don't jump and assume that God already really wanted there to be a king. A king has some very good values, and sometimes a king can do wrong. And it could be like he's saying a life sentence or a death sentence, depending on the situation. So it's just, I just brought that as I thought something cute. That's a good question as well. Listen, in our Jewish history, it was the Navi. Meaning, if you start from, meaning...
So, Som Tasim Alecha is directed at the Navi?
Som Tasim literally means the Jewish nation, the people. But how it was done is a good point. Yeah. I would say this. The appointment has to take place by the Navi. But at the end of the day, as we all know too well, you can't have a king without acceptance from the people. Meaning, again, that way, this is true. This is true. Like there's a famous phrase, "Ein Melech Belo Am." We're getting into Elul now, and we're approaching Rosh Hashanah. When we talk about kingship, we talk about kingdom. The one thing that God can't do is accept Himself as king. It requires us. So, on some level, you have to have acceptance of the people in order for it to work. True, but you also have splits. No, of course. Again, we're not talking. Yeah, and he was obviously. I mean, it was very, very different. That was a dictatorship. But the point being that yes, the point being that you, in order to be a king of a people, the people have to accept you as well. And therefore, I mean, we're talking about who actually appointed the king. I can't tell you 100%. It depends on the situation. But you still needed the acceptance of the people. Okay, I just want to move on for time's sake. So that's one opinion. The other group of Mefarshim, and this is the majority of the Mefarshim, believe that appointing a king is a positive thing. It's necessary. We as Jewish people need to have a king. And not only that, it's a commandment. It's a mitzvah. Look at source number 7, the Ramban. Al Das Rabosinu. Kimov, when the Pasuk says, V'amarta asim alai melech, it's actually a command. It's not, and you say I should, that I will appoint. It's, you ve'emor asim alai melech. The Torah is saying, you should appoint a king. V'hi mitzvat asay, it's a positive commandment. She'yichayev otanu lomar kein achar yerusha v'yeshiva. This is a positive commandment that we are obligated that after we settle the land, kilashon v'asitam, that we are meant to appoint a king. V'hizkir v'amarta. So then if that's the case, why does it phrase it as, and you say you want a king? Ki mitzvah sheyavo lifnei ha-kohanim v'alevi'im el ha-shofet v'yamru lahem ritzoneinu sh'nasim aleinu melech. Meaning, the Ramban is a mechudash way of understanding the psukim. It's not that you should only appoint a king when the people want it. It's a command. When you enter and settle the land, you should ask for a king. The process should be not one of the Navi goes and just appoints one. The people should initiate it. Why? As we just talked about before, in order for a king to be effective, the people have to want it. And so it's a commandment for the people to go to the leadership and say, we want a king. And then the leadership should appoint that king. Okay, so it's interesting the way the Ramban is going to read it. But then, if that's the case, back to our question about Sefer Shmuel. If it was a commandment, they were supposed to do this, then didn't the people do exactly what they were supposed to do? They went to Shmuel and said, we want a king. So in order to explain that, let's look at source number 8. Source number 8, the Ramban elsewhere explains what the problem was. What the problem was. The problem was, similar to what we saw earlier, it was a problem of timing. Okay? Look at the second paragraph in source number 8. Hayakol zem ipnei shehaya Shmuel shofet v'navi v'lochem milchamotehem al pi Hashem. At the time that the Jewish people came, Shmuel was the shofet. He was the ruler. And he was the navi. And he did everything that a king was supposed to do. V'lo haya lehem l'sha'ol melech b'yamav. They shouldn't have approached and asked for a king while Shmuel was still alive. That is the Ramban's command. That is the Ramban's idea. The Ramban says the mistake was, this was hinted at in the Tosefta, the mistake was they shouldn't have, the timing. They should have waited. They should have waited until Shmuel had passed away. Maybe then, if things weren't working out, then they should have approached and asked for a king. Asking for a king while Shmuel was alive was almost a chutzpah, because Shmuel was filling that role, and therefore that was the problem. Look at the Ramban. Kemo she'amar lehem v'ashem lokechem malkechem. V'Hashem amar lo lo otchama asu ki otima asu mimloch aleihem ulefikach lo natan lehem malchut shel kayama. Says the Ramban something very fascinating. Because their request was inappropriately timed, therefore, who does God appoint to be their king? A king that isn't going to last. Show. Meaning, God did that as a response to their request. If you look now to the first paragraph of source number 8. Inyan Sha'ul Haya, ki ba'avor she'dvar she'elat ha'malchut ve'etahi nita'ev etzel ha'kadosh baruch hu. Because God was upset at how they asked for the king, lo ratza lamlich aleihem min ha'shevet asher lo ha'malchut shelo yasru mimenu li'olamim. God didn't want to appoint a king who was going to rest a rule forever. From Malchus of David and from Malchus of Yehuda, it wasn't ready right now. Why not? Because God could, because of the way they asked. Because they asked in an inappropriate way, God said, I'm going to give you a king, but this king isn't going to last. This king isn't going to last. And that's according to the Ramban. The Ramban, by the way, also says something very, very similar. He says it's a commandment. It's a mitzvah. The problem was they should have waited and they shouldn't have done it at this time. Now, what's a little bit of a challenge with this?
Trivializes the mistake.
What do you mean?
Back to basics. What did Hashem say? You can't appoint a foreign king. Why not? Because he's going to import foreign values. He's going to... And what else? A king has to adhere to the Torah. A foreigner is not going to adhere to the Torah.
Okay.
So those are our requirements for you to be different from other nations. Look at what happened in the time of Shmuel. the people came and asked for a king like the other nations.
Okay, so that's a different interpretation. But that's at least according to the Ramban. And Ramban, that's not the problem. I think the challenge with it is, though, it's a fair point, and you're going to see that there are some who say like you, who suggest like you. The problem, I think, with it, and again, I'm just for timing it, with everyone's permission, I want to we'll go and then take any questions at the end. The challenge with it is that if you look at the text as we saw it, Shmuel was older, he wasn't really functioning, at least according to the way the text describes it. His sons, according to the simple understanding of the text, weren't appropriate. So if anything, it seems to me like this was the perfect timing. Because you have an older person. If you want to have a proper succession, this is the best way to do it. So it's challenging, at least from what I think that's the challenge that we could give to the Rambam and the Ramban, which is that the timing wasn't correct. Well, then, if anything, you usually want to have a proper succession by before that person, the next person dies to have. And if you want to say that the sons should have done it, the sons, at least the simple understanding is that they weren't following in their path. Now, it could be the Rambam and the Ramban understood it, not like the simple understanding that Shmuel's sons weren't as bad as they appear to be in the simple text of the. But at least it raises the question. I want to just share with you a couple of other interpretations as to what the problem, because I think they're very, very important for us and very relevant for us as well. The Ran in Drashot HaRan gives a totally different understanding of what the problem was. The Ran also has the basic understanding, and again, he says this in the beginning, I brought for you in source number 10, the first paragraph, he talks about how, of course there's a need for a king, because a king is what unites the people. A king makes sure that everything functions in the way that it's going to, that it needs to be. A society needs a king or some kind of monarchy, at least based on how it was back then, in order to function appropriately. Without a king, things would fall apart, there would be anarchy. What was the problem? The problem was, says the Ran, and I'll say it outside for time purposes, the problem was that the way that God designed it, there was a very clear balance of power. You had the king, who had certain power. You also had the Shoftim and the Beit Din, and they were supposed to basically judge the laws. So you had different people who were meant to have different parts of power. When Am Yisrael and Sefer Shmuel come to Shmuel and say, we want a king, what's the reasoning they give? They say, we want a king, lishpot aleinu, to judge us, to basically be not just our king, but to also be our judge, to be our shofet. And says the Ran, that was problematic, because there was that was combining two different roles in one, and that was never the way that God intended it. God didn't intend there to be a king who's going to lead you out to war. According to the Ran, you have the judges, and they're the ones who are supposed to be in charge of the rule of law, and the king is there to apply in unique circumstances when necessary. But he's not meant to be the main judge, because then when you don't have that proper balance of power, it could cause, as we know, corruption. If you have a king who's also going to be the judge and also going to do everything, then that's problematic, and that's what the people wanted. They didn't want a batei din who was going to rule them based on the Torah and a judge who was going to balance it. They wanted a king who was going to balance it. They wanted a king to do everything, to be like the other nations, not to be judged according to the Torah. They wanted to just have a king who was going to be total, like a total, almost like a dictatorship in a way. And that, says the Ran, that was problematic. It was problematic because it was not the way that it was. There's always, in any kind of society, in any kind of governance, there's always a delicate balance. And whenever you play with that balance, then there's always going to be ramifications. Now, again, I don't mean to get political in any way, shape, or form. Don't misunderstand me, okay? But these are the things that we're struggling with as a society right now. Moving on to democracy, the balance of powers, how you find that proper balance between different things. These are things that we were struggling with then, and we're still struggling with now. It's amazing how timeless these things are. Just with your permission, ladies and gentlemen, just because of time, and I'm happy to take any questions or stay afterwards. I want to share with you one final interpretation, which I think is maybe also a very powerful idea and very relevant. The Kli Yakar, in his interpretation on the Torah, makes an important distinction between the way that leadership and kingship is phrased in the Torah and the way that it's phrased in Sefer Shmuel. According, says the Kli Yakar, if you look very carefully, how is it phrased when we're commanded to appoint a king? It says, Som Tasim Alecha Melech. You should appoint a king upon you. When the Jewish people ask for a king, they ask for a king in the following language. It's very, very nuanced, but it's an important distinction. They come to Shmuel and they say, Sima Lanu Melech. Place for us a king. It doesn't say place Sima Aleinu Melech. What's the difference between Lanu and Aleinu? Aleinu implies that you have a king who is independent and can judge or can rule as necessary. And sometimes that means getting the people upset. Sometimes it means taking hard stances. It means being a leader. A leader means I do what I need to do, and I'm not always worried about what other people are going to say. I do what's right. Sima lanu melech. What's sima lanu melech? And it's amazing because the Kli Yakar is hinting at something so, so important. He says, sima lanu melech means I want my puppet. I want you to give us a king, not because he's gonna challenge us, not because he's gonna say hard things or give us hard or make hard decisions. We want like a puppet to put in place that will say what we want and do it. By the way, the Kli Yakar is an amazing line. I should have researched. I don't know when he lived and what year he's talking about, but it's so prescient. He talks about shuls. Ukiminag aratzot elu shemikablim ezerav. They appoint a rav. This is in the second paragraph, the second underlined part in source 11. Alzman yadua. It's not that they want to have to fear him or respect him. They want to have a rabbi, appoint the rabbi, and the rabbi to be scared of them. They want to control the rabbi. And then he has to cater to them, and he has to kiss up to them, and he has to flatter them. That's not a leader. That's not a leader. My father used to have when he was in Englewood. He used to have a great quote from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter on his desk. I don't know where it is now. I think it's in his office and here in Yerushalayim. And the quote was the following: a rabbi, listen closely, a rabbi whose community does not disagree with him is not really a rabbi. Okay, and a rabbi who fears his community is not really a man. Because in order to be, now, and it's a fine balance. In today's world, this is a fine balance. In the world of boards, and in the world of VODs, and everything where you got your job because of certain people, and so many different pieces are happening, it's very hard to be a leader. But to be a leader means that we ask for somebody, we as the people need to want a leader who's going to lead, and not someone who's just going to do what we want. And being a leader means to find that balance. It means you have to build up a reputation. It means you have to have a relationship with the people. You can't just lead from above without that relationship. They have to care about you and they have to respect you. But that doesn't always mean that you have to do what they want. And I just want to point one thing here, just because I think it's really, really beautiful. Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, and then you'll have time to read it through yourself. In a drasha he gave in the Jewish Center in Manhattan, talked about this point: the difference between what he calls a lanu melech and an aleinu melech. Right, and the difference obviously is when you want real leadership, you want an al melech. You don't want a lanu melech. A lanu melech is somebody that you want to just control. An al melech is somebody that you want to lead. There is no doubt. The second paragraph. There is no doubt that a lanu leader is more popular than the al leader. But in the long run, the trust must come out. Rule by consensus alone, leading merely where the public opinion polls indicate the public wants to go, is not an exercise of leadership or commitment or orientation. It is merely a specialized craft, a talent, a technique. Second paragraph is source number 12. A community is not enlightened, and humanity does not make strides when its leaders merely pamper its latent prejudices. This is true, by the way, he's writing this in 1965. 1965 is still the beginning of the State of Israel. This is true of the leadership of government, and it is also true of mass movements. Zionism, for instance, was blessed with great leaders who achieved great success. But especially in its later years, its leadership experienced failure as well. They emphasized only the political dimensions and goals, the founding of a state. But they were not able to bring their people along to the awareness that Zionism had and should have cultural and educational religious goals as well. It turned into a lanu leadership and not an al kind of leadership. And he goes on. And then he just adds, and this is where I think it's very important as we get to Rosh Hashanah. He says, if this is what's relevant for us as a people when we're talking about a regular king, it's also the type of attitude we should have when we talk about the King of Kings. What we have, this is the second to last paragraph. We'll just read these two paragraphs, but this will end. What we have said of human leadership as a mortal king or melech is equally and even more true of divine leadership. The immortal melech malchei hamlachim. We fulfill a great mitzvah if we accept God as a king upon us. We commit a major spiritual crime if we expect him to be a little god for us who does our bidding. An authentic religion does not cater to what people want and think they need. It teaches them to want what they really need. It leads them to aspire to higher deeds and more sublime ideals. if Judaism may, as indeed its modernist versions have averred, be cut and truncated and transformed and reformed to conform to the latest ephemeral intellectual currents. And again, this is in 1965, and we're now in 2023. How true is everything that he's saying right now? Currents and fads of fashion and tastes. And then it reveals that at the bottom there is an immature concept of God as a king of divine servant, or at best a divine insurance agent who will provide for our happiness and convenience. God is not a king for us. He is a king over us. Som tasim alecha melech. That is the essence of Torah and the meaning of halacha. And so Rabbi Lamb is bringing this now home for Elul as we approach Rosh Hashanah. The attitude that we need to have, what we should want in a king or in a leader, is somebody who leads, not just somebody who does what we think, what we want every single time. And that's also true of our, of the concept we should have of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I apologize for going a little bit over and for cutting off. I'm happy to stay if anybody has any future questions. Wishing everybody a wonderful, wonderful week.